This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks, and George at the mic today.
Taking over the helm.
And, welcome, Ty, to another Cliff or Auto Central,
another Auto Central, sitting on the other side of the desk this morning. It's actually quite...
feels weird.
It's spacious aside.
Yeah, a lot more space aside. Sit back and let George drive. George is driving the ship this morning, which is good.
So flap his arms around.
There we go.
And then we have one dealer.
Yeah, back again, another week.
Back again. Yeah. Is there a reason you wear your headphones like that?
I like to be
in touch.
I guess aware with what's happening in my surroundings.
Oh, okay. You
know, half happen. In, half out. So well, I don't know what else is going to happen.
Well, you're doing the
here.
Same freaking
well,
thing.
Well, I just want to see what he's experiencing. Because this is a gangster, man.
It is. I try to keep it as real as possible.
Okay. And then we have Lawrence.
Yeah, what's up?
How's it?
It's great to be back.
Great to be back.
Yeah.
We're going to hear all about your little extravaganza a little bit later on, yeah?
My little adventure in the southeast.
In the southeast.
Yeah.
That's deep southeast. not South Africa.
Sounds like Mondial.
No, exactly. No, but this is a little bit more east, I think. Far more east.
Well, let's get right into it. So, Ford SA, you've probably been hearing about the break-ins into the Ford cars, and you know, I've seen a couple of videos go around the social media networks, and there's been hundreds of them, right?
Yeah, there have been a couple.
Yeah, almost thousands, actually.
Almost thousands of them, and you know, Ford SA now vows to fix these easily broken cars, in an attempt to combat the problem. So Ford South Africa has announced that it's working on a solution to the security problem that has caused the stir in social media in recent weeks. This comes after numerous owners of various Fords and EcoSport models have complained in losing their valuables and through these car break-ins. And, you know, what do you guys think of this?
Well, I mean, they're
challenge.
They're blaming the easy-to-pick locks. So clearly, you know, the thugs and the gangsters out there know that there's a specific type of lock in the Fiesta and the EcoSport.
Yeah.
And it just makes it for easy pickings. And
I've watched some of these videos,
yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't look like the lock gets picked. It looks like the lock gets flipping broken.
Well, listen, they literally jam a screwdriver in there and then they give it a twist. But the thing is, it was on Carte Blanche last night as well. That can actually remove that entire, I don't know what it would be called. Lawrence, what is that thing called? Like the lock mechanism.
Mm.
Is that the
right thing? Just the cover.
Yeah, it's like a cover.
Well, the cover.
But the actual lock comes out as well. And then they clip
the barrel.
The barrel.
The barrel of the lock.
The barrel of the lock.
Well, it's round.
Yeah, well... You know, so they're taking this whole piece out. They're cutting the immobilizer wire, I think it is.
Yeah.
And what that does is it releases the locks on all the doors. Then the guy simply closes that. He doesn't even open the front door, the passenger door. He goes straight to the boot and voila, you know.
Okay, so 6 months ago, what was the way that the criminals gained access to your car in the parking lot?
It was a remote jamming.
Okay, so they've now found a way to stop that. And what have the criminals done?
Now they just take going back to how it used to be done in the
office. Finding another way to get in.
Yeah.
Manual remote jamming.
Yeah.
What so, I want to know, though, is this like a South African thing? Because it seems like it's only happening in South Africa. Why is it not?
Because we have the most enterprising criminals in the world.
must be.
Entrepreneurs, China. Entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurism's great.
But
but you make a valid point, though. Like, is this only happening here? Surely these locks are on other vehicles, other Ford models around the world.
That's a good question. You know, I don't know whether they're on other Fords around the world.
Someone's going to start an application.
I think Lawrence has got a point.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got probably the most entrepreneurial thieves.
But they're just going to find another way to do it.
Okay,
You can fit a flamethrower to your car. The guy's going to find a way to immobilize that.
I actually
and
saw
he will steal your laptop.
Some oak in, I don't know where he was, but I'm assuming he's east of north. Let's just say that
east of north.
East
you know,
of
just
north.
Say Brakpan.
Left of right.
But this guy rigged his car with pepper spray. So he's
put
four
the video.
Barrels of pepper spray at the base of his on his like his running boards, and if he has any trouble there,
push a button and you're gonna get red eyes.
I'm gonna guess you. Yeah. But anyway, I think George, I don't want to cut you off there, but you know, this is obviously quite serious. You know, the last thing you want to be doing is driving around knowing that, you know, there's a chance that my car is for easy pickings. And the question I ask, and this was obviously brought up on the show last night, and it's in the article, is Ford, obviously, you know, they're saying, okay, cool, we understand there's a problem, and they're going to try and sort it out. But it just doesn't look like things have happened quick enough.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's really hard for you to sell thousands and thousands of vehicles and then to actually recall those vehicles to make changes.
Absolutely.
It's very, very hard
and
to
it
do.
Must cost
a, it must cost a bomb.
Exactly.
So, you know, good on Ford for committing to fix the problem. I think it doesn't stop, you know, you can't, just because Ford's promised to fix the problem doesn't mean you as a consumer owning a Ford, now you got to sit back and say, oh, okay, well, you know, just let it get broken into.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And also, I mean,
take precautions.
Don't leave your stuff lying around. But again, I mean, there was a woman on the show last night saying that she used to always finish work, go to the shop, come home. Now she's finishing work, going home, unpacking the car, then going to the shop and then going home. What a schlep.
No, it's an absolute schlep. But the thing is, it just shows you the criminals are there. Whether you're in a Ford or whether you're in a Porsche.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you
The eat. Criminal's there and he's going to take the opportunities if presented to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't matter what car it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, I mean, Ford might be in the highlight at the moment or being highlighted at the moment, but it doesn't mean the criminal activity's not there. When Ford fixes this problem, the criminal's still going
to
be there.
No, absolutely. And just to make a note that this is not on the new vehicles, though. This is the
older vehicles, yeah.
The older EcoSports and Fiestas. But not cool anyway. I mean, we still shouldn't have people wanting to break into other people's stuff.
It's more of a law enforcement problem than a car problem.
100%. Should we say our key catchphrase again?
Exactly.
What is it? Visible policing.
Shit. That is where it starts and
My
stops.
My favorite words in the
English. Visible policing.
Yeah.
So anyway, next story that's in the news is VW insists electric cars pollute less than diesels. Now, before the show, I was saying like, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Lawrence, you had a thing or an opinion about why electric vehicles potentially have a bigger carbon footprint.
So, okay, well, this comes down to the making of the car. It's not the actual driving of the car or the maintenance of the car. It is the once-off carbon cost of making an electric car is much higher than the cost of making a diesel car. But over the lifespan of the two vehicles, you will eventually reach a cross point, and then the diesel is going to be the heavy polluter, while the electric car will continue to be the clean option.
So if we had to take this electric car versus a diesel over, a 20-year period,
yes,
which one is worse for the environment?
The diesel.
Mm. Okay. So therefore the pollution or the carbon footprint is all the way up front, is what you're saying. So, you know, is there any real need to prove or disprove that? Why are people on this bandwagon to try and diss electric cars?
I think you're always going to have it. I don't know if you guys, Netflix, there's a program called Peaky Blinders. Which is...
Never seen it.
Okay, well, it's about these Irish guys back after World War One that literally control, the city in the UK. And for me, this smacks of that. I mean, the guys that are making diesel, that are making petrol, they obviously don't want to... I mean, electric cars are going to hurt their industry hugely. So are they the guys that are going, hang on a sec, we need to, you know...
Well, if you look at where these articles keep coming from, it's economists and physicians, and it's all these people who seem to be working for the diesel industry or the petrol industry.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that the feather picking of feathers from birds industry,
yes,
did the same thing when we went to a ballpoint pen.
Absolutely. Must
you know, like, what do people expect? Do they expect us to stay in the dark ages forever?
Well, the thing for me is, why aren't the likes of, I don't know, and I mean, I don't know enough about it, but let's just say petrol company manufacturer A, they should be diversifying, and they should be driving electric and becoming the next the suppliers of the what would it be, the what's the right term, the thing that produces the energy vehicle.
They should just change.
This is what I'm saying.
Go out of business. That's the 100%.
Constant change. When you look at city centers around the world, so we're talking Moscow, London,
Shanghai.
Mexico, Shanghai, diesel vehicles are banned. You are not allowed to drive a diesel vehicle within the city limits. So it's either comply Or walk.
Or walk, exactly. Or ride a bicycle.
And there isn't a diesel vehicle in sight.
Exactly. And that's the way the world should go very, very quickly. So, you know, I wonder, you know, I just wonder why people are resistant to the change when it's a positive change. Exactly. It doesn't matter that the cost is up front. Mm. The fact of the matter is that the lifespan of the car yields a lower carbon footprint.
100%. So what's better for the environment in the long run? It's the electric vehicle. Mm.
The electric car is better. And also it lasts longer.
Martin's so just crashed his test car because he's actually listening to us.
Martin's just driven off the R45. Ocean.
He's like, damn those bastards! I'm not there to defend. Should I dial him in?
So you know, I think change or go out of business. That's the principle, really.
100%, George. Know. But just quickly, you know what struck me about this? It says the study found that a diesel powered VW Golf produces 140 grams of carbon dioxide per kilometer over the course of its lifetime, and that's including production and over 200,000 kilometers of driving. An electric Golf produces 119 grams of CO2 based on some European Union's current power generation mix, and 142 grams based on the Germany's energy mix. So it's not half.
Yeah,
it's still relatively high, but I don't know if that's from the manufacturing side.
No, what they're working on there then is, of course, the power generation required to charge the vehicle. But they're not taking into account most of the auto manufacturers that are looking at alternative means of charging vehicles.
Mm.
We're not charging off the national grid. Yep. You should not be charging off the national grid.
Exactly.
You should be using alternative things like hydrogen. There's
your generator.
Well, then that's a dumb measure because, I mean, we all know that electric cars, first of all, have about maybe 200 moving parts, whereas a petrol-powered or ICE vehicle has over 2,000 moving parts, which in essence means that there's more stuff to break on a petrol engine car.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're getting an electric car that can last a lot longer because it has less moving parts. Then the second thing is efficiency. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lawrence, but a ICE vehicle loses about 80% of its power as a result of inefficiency.
Yeah.
So it only produces 20 to 30% from the engine right to the wheels. It loses heat and friction, all those things.
Drivetrain losses.
Whereas it is the flip side for electric cars. The loss of efficiency is a lot less.
Yeah.
Which means that you can't really compare an electric car to an ICE vehicle from a charging point of view, and just because it comes from a coal power station or a dirty power station.
Exactly.
The efficiency in the electric car is unbelievable.
And I bet you now this study doesn't go back, because to George's point, if you take the 200 pieces that it takes to make an electric vehicle and you compare that to the thousands of pieces it takes to make an ICE car, and you look at the manufacturing processes of all of those things and you put that all into the basket, I can tell you now that electric wins hands down.
So I think this is a really kind of one-dimensional view, in my humble opinion.
They need to scratch
story's a bit backwards, and it really is. It's handpicking facts that suit your narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this is the thing we believe in, so we're going to fit the story around what we believe in. All right. Well, something that's going to happen at the beginning of May. Nobody really likes this topic.
Please don't say it.
But fuel is going to go up.
Again.
That makes me sad.
Moment of silence.
It makes me sad. I want to cry.
Fuel is going to go up.
54 cents.
Well, around 53 or 54 cents a litre in May. The final prices are expected to be announced this Friday. And 53 cents increase would push the price of 95 unleaded to 16 rand and 2 cents, and at the coast, and 16 rand and 66 cents in Gauteng, with 93 unleaded retailing at 16 rand 47.
That is a crap load of money for a litre of something.
Yeah, and all of its taxes.
It's almost as expensive as milk.
Mm. Well, yes.
Well, it's as important as milk.
Absolutely.
Probably more important than milk. So it should be cheaper. It should really be cheaper.
Yeah, I don't know.
So what are the impacts? I mean, I think there's a couple of positives and a couple of negatives. A couple of the negative impacts are, you know, more than likely people will hang on to their cars longer.
Yep.
You know, so people are going to want to consume less fuel. So what does consuming less fuel mean? I drive less and I reduce my costs and I don't want to get into another car.
Freewheel more.
Freewheel more.
I'm the king of freewheeling. I really am. And I had to do it this weekend. So I was visiting a friend and I had, I could only do another, because I drive that car until it's like there's a drop.
Empty.
I've often planned it that I can actually just cruise into the garage as the car runs out of fuel. So I'm that good. And I did, but I left my wallet at home. So I had to do a U-turn and go back. And then I was caught between shit. I'm now going to run out of petrol and I don't have my wallet. So well done. You know, exactly. What I managed though. I came right. So got the wallet, put in petrol and still freewheeled half the way. Daniels are the businessmen. I'm telling you now.
So what industries is this fuel price going to hit besides the consumer? It's going to hit the
transport.
Banks.
It's going to hit the banks.
It's going to hit the banks. So why will it hit the banks? Because as people hold on to more cars, there will be less deals going through the banks.
Yep.
So I think it's going to hit the banks. The second thing it's going to hit is filling stations. People don't realize that filling station owners rely on that little shop for income. They don't rely on the fuel.
No.
The fuel brings the feet.
Yes.
So if you've got less people through that filling station because you're pumping less liters.
100%.
First of all, your garage is going to go down in profit.
Yep.
And then second of all, the prices inside that shop, what is going to happen to
them?
They're
going to go up.
They're going to go up.
Yep.
Because they have to make ends meet.
They're already very high.
Well, and what's the knock-on effect from that? So you're selling less Cadbury's chocolate, which means Cadbury's then put their prices up. Cadbury's are also going to charge you a little bit more because now it costs them more to get that food to the petrol station.
Everything goes up.
It's just a
knock-on effect of note. Big transport companies that obviously have fuel in their cost base are going to push prices of transport up, which means if courier and transport costs go up, the price of the end product goes up. So it has far more reaching effects than just driving a car.
Business travel. I mean, you know, think about, you know, the Avis fleet, you know.
And then, you know, maybe this is a vicious, virtuous circle, because the next thing is the tax revenues will be hit. Because if people drive less, guess what's going to happen? They're going to collect less fuel levy, which means that the 77.5 billion rand planned for 2018-2019 ain't going to happen.
So they're going to have to find that money elsewhere, right?
Well, they push the fuel levy up more or push taxes up more
because
this is a massive and vicious circle.
I think at the end of the day, it's the consumer that just gets screwed over and over.
Time
and
to buy
over.
An electric car, people.
I agree.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, positive impacts. Environmental benefits. So people drive less, less stuff going into the air.
Less car accidents.
Walk a lot more in freewheel in Dale's case.
Yeah, less car accidents.
Less car accidents. And then you may just see some good deals coming your way, because the manufacturers have to make their volumes, which means that they're going to be under price pressure. And
maybe Taxify and Uber will see an increase as well from as people ride sharing.
Yeah. Well, their prices will go up as well because they need to pay the fuel for the taxis.
So. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Talking about Taxify, let's talk about that for a second. So they're changing their name to Bolt, apparently.
Isn't there a copyright infringement there with Disney?
Bolt. Yeah, there was a movie Bolt. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Isn't that, it's a cartoon character, right?
Yeah. It was the little dog, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that change has actually already happened. Some people.
It looks like it's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the CEO of and co-founder Marcus Willich said that they've outgrown the brand and the name signifies speed, being fast, effortless movement. And exactly what they need to move into the future. So, you know, it's a case of they feel like they've outgrown their name. Now, my opinion is that Taxify has the word taxi in it, and traditionally the word taxi has got negative connotations.
Yeah. I think this is a good move for them.
It's a good move. I think it's a good
move. I think so too.
You know, I think it's a really good move.
So the Bolt also might have a negative connotation, because when you said somebody Bolt, China, that means you were doing something wrong and you had to get away quickly. So
Taxify changing their name. And then this company Car2Go, which has reportedly been hacked and some 100 cars have gone missing. So Car2Go launched in Chicago in 2018 with
car sharing.
So you kind of book the car, you take it, you bring it back. With 400 Daimlers,
it doesn't come back.
these cars didn't come back, and that big fleet just took a big hit. The car sharing app has now reportedly been hacked, and some 100 cars have been stolen as a result. So, you know, these things are hackable. I mean, remember the Jeep?
Enterprising thieves.
Yeah, the Jeep with the guy,
he hacked it on purpose. Yes. And in a controlled environment.
Yes.
And showed that it can be hacked. So the more digital we become, the more susceptible we become.
It's just scary that they took 100 cars so quickly. It's just like, was there something just wrong with the car? What was going on?
Well, it's the app that got hacked because obviously you book the car, you pick it up, you can unlock it. And in most of these cases, I don't know about this app, but you can use your phone to unlock the car, and the technology enables that. So I don't think it's a problem with the vehicle itself. It's more the Car2Go application that got hacked.
So these guys are using these cars to commit crimes. So it says as many as 100 Mercedes high-end cars are missing. This is some guy tweeted, Brad Edwards, TV Brad, obviously an American guy somewhere. 12 people in custody so far. But I mean, these guys are using these cars now as getaway vehicles because the car's not registered to you. So you can get away in a getaway car and not have it linked back. I mean, it's amazing.
Getaway car to go.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I've just robbed a bank, yo. Can you pick me up, please? Thanks.
Enterprising criminals.
Enterprising criminals. I can't.
I wonder if a bank robber's ever thought of calling an Uber to you.
Yeah, just Uber. Bob, are you done? Yeah, give me a sec. I'm just going to get the Uber quickly, you know. Call it. We'll be here in 5 minutes. And you're scaring and holding a gun to someone's head.
The number plate is.
Exactly. And then you get into the car and you still check the driver is and make sure there's no one in the boot in case you're going to get robbed after you've robbed the bank.
These big bags over your back.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like Father Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Flip. Oh, yeah. So, South African buckies. Bucky is a synonymous term for a lot of South Africans across the country. And the Toyota Hilux is one of the most popular buckies in South Africa. I mean, Toyota is a popular brand in Africa anyway.
Yes.
If you had to paint Africa with car manufacturer colors, yeah, Africa would be red because of Toyota. But best resale value. So which buckies in South Africa have the best resale values? I'd be keen to hear Lawrence's opinion on this.
Okay, so it'll be...
Have you looked at the article?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to give it a wild guess.
Yeah.
Hilux, Ford, Isuzu, and then it sort of goes from down there.
Okay, so you got, but
you must be more specific though. Yeah, so Hilux, okay, that you were specific.
Yeah.
Then you said Ford
Ranger.
Okay, and then
the Isuzu D-Max.
Okay.
It sort of goes down from there. I'm not really.
Well, he's 75% sharp.
Yeah, right? Very good.
Because car number one on the list with the highest resale value losing the least amount of value at 72.4% was Toyota Hilux.
No surprise there.
Yep. And then second,
my Hilux,
the one that you were off on was, I don't think you're going to believe this one, is the Utility.
Corsa Bucky,
man. Corsa.
Yeah. Those are phenomenal.
Well, we don't really consider them anymore because they're not sold anymore.
Yes.
You really can only get them a second hand.
Maybe that's why the value is being held up.
4 years. For small business, in terms of delivery vehicle, whatever, I drove a Chevy Utility for 4 years as a company car. They are amazing. And I think when I gave the keys to that vehicle back, it was sitting at just under 800,000 Ks.
Jeez, luck.
I mean, I drove Gauteng flat, dropping off stuff left, right, and center.
Were you robbing banks?
No, I was
Uber.
I was visiting mines. Let's put it that way. So,
okay, diamonds and gold. Sorry,
that's actually a good point. Uber doesn't have a bucky option.
No, they don't.
Huh? Maybe there's an opportunity.
They have an SUV option with Uber Black.
Yeah, they got an SUV option, but they got no bucky option. So,
There's a gap in the market there, Uber.
Yeah. Hey, if I wanted some stuff going to throw at the dump, just order an
Uber. No, absolutely. Order an Uber van. Like an Uber bucky.
I wonder if you order an Uber van and you, like, all your black bags and
just crap throw it that in the you want to check in. Yeah, that's where you're going, but just offload the shit in the back, please.
So Chevrolet Utility was number two. It's almost 72% of its original resale value retained.
Because they are very valuable vehicles.
Yeah, very. And then... You were right, Isuzu KB Max.
Yeah.
At almost 68% of its original resale value. Very nice looking car, this KB Max.
It is, hey. Mm. I like it.
It's very nice. And then next on the list was the Nissan NP200, which kind
another
of a
small
think
utility
would have taken over from the Chev.
Now the Chev, there were a lot more of them made. NP200 was always playing second fiddle to them until GM pulled out, and then they were the only ones left. So yes, I can sort of understand, and I think a lot of this is based on fleet.
Probably.
It's small business and business owners. So even the Hilux could also, it's probably not the double cab, it's the utility vehicle.
It's the double cab.
Yeah.
And
when if you look at the majority of the mines up here in Joburg, all your mine foremen, all your mechanics, the guys that work on stuff, that have the toolbox on the back.
Mm. Yeah.
It's all Hiluxes.
Yeah.
So they are, once again, I'm saying that's why I say I think this is, it's based on fleet numbers, service vehicles.
More than likely. But it's resale value at the end of the day. So next on the list was what you thought was number two, Ford Ranger. Mm. Retained 66% of its value. And then the VW Amarok at 65%.
What a car.
You like it?
Absolutely. Smitten.
Really?
Yes.
I think it's a bit of a box.
Well, you need to drive one.
Does it have leaf springs in the back?
It does, yes. Mm. But for very good reason.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Do you think it's lower than everything else because it's a VW, or do you think it's just...
Because it's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. It's probably in the same category as the Mercedes-Benz.
It is indeed.
Bucky, where there aren't enough. So I think Lawrence is probably on the money when it comes to sales volumes, which affect the selling, the resale value. And then the Mazda BT50, almost 64% of its original resale value. And the Nissan NP300 hardbody. A death trap, what? Mm.
That's the thing that scored zero on its NCAP crash test.
It
snapped
looks
in half.
Like a Tata. You're right. To be honest. Looks a little bit like a Tata. And then the Nissan Navara, which I thought would have had a slightly higher resale value. This was a very popular car at one point. This Nissan Navara.
The problem is they were out of the market for too long, and then they brought a car 5 years too late. Mm. And shortly on the heels of that came the Mercedes-Benz, and everybody sort of went... Oh.
Yeah, and it had the worst back seat. Yeah. It was hard.
They've lost the plot. So they lost their market share to the guys that had stuck around. It took them 15 years to bring out a new car, and they were 5 years too late to market. So I don't blame them, but it's nice that they are coming back.
Yeah. And then, very lastly, the GWM Steed at 57% of its original resale value. Yeah.
Which is interesting, because I bet you that give that in 5 years' time, if we sit and have the same conversation, that's going to change. Well,
things are going to be definitely
different. And we'll get onto that now with when we chat to Lawrence. But interesting what he was saying off air just now. Very interesting.
So, and then one thing that, you know, in our entrepreneurial... criminal environment. Mm. What is the best seating plan for to keep your family safe at a time of a hijack when you've got kids in the car? What do you think? If you haven't had a look at the,
had a look, but I mean, my call would have been exactly the same as that. Yeah,
Lawrence, where would you put your kids in what order, youngest to oldest?
Well, logic suggests that. Well, safety suggests that the smallest kids should be sitting in the middle, the biggest kids on the outside by the doors. What they're probably saying is keep the smallest child close to the door so that you can grab them quickly on the way out. I say screw that, drive over the hijacker.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But if
I shouldn't have to be picking and choosing my children who's going to be the safest. Mm. Screw you, I'm going to drive over you. I don't give a damn.
If you have an opportunity to drive away... you do that.
But I'll stop and reverse and then drive over him again. Yeah, you'll never hijack somebody.
I would just want to get out of there. That's the main thing. But the optimal place to keep, I agree with this because I've thought this through before. And that is have the oldest child directly behind the driver and have the youngest child in the directly behind the passenger. The
What's
front
the
passenger.
Reason for this?
So the theory is, and I can believe this because I've got a baby myself, and she sits diagonally opposite the driver. You know, you can at a traffic light or whatever, you can turn around and you can look at her. But I've always thought if I wanted to get her out of the car, I could I could reach over, and I've kind of done practiced this, not with her, but just to see whether I could do it, was reach over, unclip her her seatbelt, grab her by the clothes, and bring her to the front of the car. You can't do that if a baby is sitting behind you.
Yeah,
it's impossible to do. And then the second theory is, if you get out of the car and the oldest child already opens the door, you can be in that door, reach across and pull your youngest child across the car. The worst thing you could do is try and run around the car to the other side. You're going to lose time and potentially have your child disappear with the hijackers. So the optimal seating plan seems to be oldest child right behind the driver and the youngest child next to that behind the passenger.
Incredible that we have to talk about this.
We have to even think about it. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point.
But it just shows you the state of the nation, doesn't it? Mm. I mean, what have we spoken about this morning? Cars being broken into. How to, you know, put your children into your car in case you get hijacked. Petrol price going up. It's just a sad state of affairs.
I mean, you should be singing. We're coming around the mountain. Absolutely. In the car rather than thinking about hijack.
Correct. 100%.
It's really, really sad. But but anyway. If you do end up in a situation like that, what is the first golden rule?
Don't panic.
Just not panic. And
give them your keys.
Give
man.
Them your just stuff. Them
keys. Just they can take everything. They just leave the kids alone. You know,
exactly.
They can take what they want.
Then a couple of other good tips is use your left arm to undo your seatbelt and put your car in neutral, because if the car jumps forward, the hijacker, trust me, he is nervous.
No, of course he's nervous.
He's going to get a fright. And the gun in his hand potentially could go off in that situation. Inadvertently, he might not want to shoot you.
Yeah.
But he could get a fright and pull the trigger. And then the next thing is, when you get out, always face sideways to a firearm. Never face forward, face on to a firearm. Because your arm, your limbs are in the way. Potentially, if you do get shot, chances are that your arm is going to get damaged and it won't penetrate your vital organs. So face sideways. And then
set a vision when you get out of car at gunpoint. You've got to pretend that you're a crab. there? You're like, yeah, I don't know.
And then do not make eye contact, because it signals a threat.
Yeah.
So don't make eye contact. Rather just try and get yourself and your kids away from the situation. But anyway, that is sad. Sad that we even have to think about it, like you say. Actually sad. Then on to lighter note. Wandile must be happy today.
Your chicken name is so Drooly.
Yeah, no, every single time it comes to this point, I just...
he relishes in
crying
the, basks in the sunlight.
I do every time.
Four straight wins for Mercedes-Benz, both 1-2s yesterday at Baku in Azerbaijan. And Wandile, do you want to take us through the highlights of the race?
This race, I think whenever you come to this race, you think about it's going to be the most interesting race of the season. It's a street race, it's fast, always lots to happen. But I think coming up to this race, it wasn't really the race that was the most exciting thing, but qualifiers. Qualifiers had such a huge impact on what happened in the race.
Smashy bashy.
That the entire weekend was just great, great for that. But yeah, as George was saying, Mercedes 1-2. Ferrari tried, they really did. But I think the strategy just cost them this time.
Well, I mean, I think Leclerc lost out because he crashed out, during qualifying, and stupid move. I think it was a rookie mistake, actually.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely a rookie mistake. He could have done a lot better, and it shows, in my mind, that while I think Leclerc is going to be a world champion at some point, it's not going to be this year because he doesn't have enough experience, and it's still Vettel on the cards. So I think he's still my favorite driver. Between the two Ferrari drivers, but what I was impressed with is that Vettel gave an entire interview to Sky Sports on Saturday, which Ferrari never do. If there's one thing that Mercedes-Benz is good at, and that is engaging with the audience. Hamilton's good at it. Mercedes is good at it, and they're very good at engaging with the audience. I mean that. Bottas, the Finn is cold as ice, so he's not as great at it. But Ferrari's never really been one to talk in the public.
Is that through history and stuff like that? Yeah. Or do you think it's always
like, culture within the team and within the, within the company that they don't like to talk about what they're doing.
Mm.
Whereas Vettel gave an entire interview to Sky Sports on Saturday, which was encouraging to see. And his demeanor kind of showed his personality, which I thought was a good thing. Otherwise, you make up your own mind in a void, right?
Yeah.
And then Ferraris were incredibly fast during free practice, but then just couldn't hold their own during qualifying. And you know, this is now the fourth time that this has happened. They show their they show their speed, unless the Mercedes
didn't Ferrari also get an upgrade this race?
I don't know.
No, it was the Red Bulls that brought upgraded Honda motors to the race.
I think Ferrari also did an aero package though.
Yeah, but I don't think it was major. It wasn't major. And then ended up third, and Leclerc ended up fifth. I mean, he did a really good drive. I think he was done in with his tires a little bit because they left him out probably about five laps too long. But I think also they left him out for that long to back up
the two Mercedes
onto Vettel,
and it worked.
Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, did it work really? Because Vettel still ended up third.
Mm.
And on the podium, but third. So
mid-table battles, though, that's where I think it was the most exciting for me.
Can I ask a question? Did they actually go and weld down all the manhole covers off?
No, they just tightened them. They just tightened them.
Okay, because I'd heard the urban legend about flying manhole covers. They poo-pooed it and said it'll never happen, and then here we go. Punk, goodbye.
She's like, and that ripped that car to shreds, huh?
Absolutely.
It was really.
So I'm thinking, are they going to go around and weld down all the manhole covers in Monaco?
No. So these manhole covers, I stand to be corrected, I think they weigh over 100 kilograms.
So it just tells you about the downforce
and shows you that, I mean, if you think about a Formula One car, what the floor is an upside down aeroplane wing. Because it sucks the car onto the floor, the faster the car goes. And to lift the manhole covers weren't off. They were in their slots.
I mean, they're stock standard, manhole covers, metal ones.
And I think they're over 100 kilos. I don't know. I have to go and check. But even if they slightly more or slightly less, for that car to lift that manhole cover out of the ground, the amount of downforce that those cars are producing is unbelievable.
Mm. Still.
So, not the favorite.
It's like driving over a paper plate. I couldn't believe how that was probably the only thing that I saw. I caught it on the highlights channel, and I was amazed. I also thought they could never do a Grand Prix in South Africa.
Well
we don't have manhole covers.
I have one question for you, actually, George. with Gasly, do you think he's gonna come? You think he's gonna come back and actually give the Ferraris and the Mercedes a fight, or
no?
It's a bit sad to see what's happening.
Yeah. I think there's been a couple of mistakes. First of all, Ricciardo should never have left Red Bull. I think he's showing it, because he's way ahead of his teammate.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, I think Ferrari made a good choice by taking Leclerc, but Raikkonen's gone to the wrong team. Raikkonen should have gone to Red Bull.
Yeah.
Because Raikkonen's good enough. He's just his head's just in the wrong space, in the wrong place a lot of the time. The rest of the guys, for me, are probably even Stevens.
Yeah.
I think they should just give the drivers' championship and the constructors' championship to Mercedes. Not allow them to race anymore and let the rest of the guys fight it out for the rest.
That's exactly what I was going to say now, because from what I'm seeing now,
this is runaway.
It's a one horse race.
It's getting boring and people are complaining about.
And it's not even a horse.
It's got up 1,000 horses.
Yeah, but I mean, it just looks like Mercedes-Benz have completely.
Yeah.
They've got it wrapped up. And unless the wheels completely fall off the bus between now and September.
Well, that could happen. That fight between Bottas and Hamilton is.
I mean, last year Mercedes-Benz didn't win didn't win a race.
Yeah.
So things can turn around. Very quickly.
Unless the wheels completely fall off the bus.
It's one little change on their part that can make the wheels fall off, and one thing that Mercedes or Red Bull discovers that can make the changes, you know, and get them to the top. Anyway, so moving swiftly along, because I can see one dealer smiling from if he didn't have ears in his head would fall off. Lawrence, you've been to Shanghai lately.
Yeah, I went to China for 8 days.
Did you wear a mask?
No, we didn't have to. Although, in retrospect, I should have, because, man, the air is like soup and you can actually taste the atmosphere. Mm. We traveled quite a bit across China. We were in Beijing, went to Baoding and Shanghai. Baoding, of course, the home of GWM and Haval, GWM City, voted the most polluted, the city with the worst air pollution in the world. And
you still didn't wear a mask?
No, I wanted to,
you wanted to immerse myself.
Savor the flavor. No, it actually, in the past, let's call it 3 to 4 years, they have actually cleaned up their act. So much so that you can actually see the buildings and it's not as bad as it was five years ago. And that is goes right back to my whole conversation about electrification. My eyes have been opened.
Hallelujah. On electric. We have a convert.
We have a convert.
I think we need to send Martin.
Where's Martin?
When you see it work in action, how the charging points are laid out, how the city traffic lanes are laid out, certain sections of like taxi routes, it's electric only.
Yeah.
And you can really see the government has now got their thumb on it and has said, right, this is what's going to happen. You're either going to like it or you're going to move.
Yeah.
Because this city is going to be fully electric by 2025. All the taxis will be electric. The buses will be electric. And if you drive an electric car, you're going to get, you're almost going to become a social outcast if you
have a petrol car.
You have petrol or diesel.
Yeah.
I mean, naturally, it's an eastern city, so there's motorcycles everywhere, but not one of them was electric. They were all electric scooters.
Not petrol, you mean?
Yeah. All of the little tuk-tuks, the three-wheel tuk-tuks,
all
electric.
Wow.
Charging points out the wazoo. Outside the restaurants, the little side cafes and stuff, it's a charging point. You can charge a scooter while you eat lunch.
And how do the charging points work? Credit cards?
This is the funny thing. QR codes.
Oh, wow.
The biggest thing since, like, you ride in a taxi, you scan the QR code on the taxi dash, boom, and it takes the money out.
Snap scan, those kinds of things.
There is almost no exchange of money. Bicycles.
Yeah.
You have those bicycles.
Yeah, the bicycle shit. Rent bicycles.
QR code on the bicycle handlebar, scan it, boop, opens up the lock, you can get on right away.
And that's not in a holding a docking station or anything. No. That could be parked against a tree.
No, yeah.
But the bike's obviously got a built-in lock.
Yeah, and everything. It's QR codes on everything.
Built-in SIM card.
From the Coke in the fridge at the little corner shop to, getting information on a billboard. It's QR codes. That's how you are. But yes, we traveled quite a bit. Went to GWM and Haval, visited all their factories, some of them. There's no way you can visit everyone because the place is just that massive. Got a really deep dive into where they're going in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And if I were an automotive manufacturer elsewhere in the world, I would be worried because these guys are bringing it. They have got, and I'm not just saying that because they took us there, but it's mind-blowing the scale at which they're advancing and pushing.
Yeah.
The last night that we were there after the Auto Shanghai Motor Show, which we saw the unveiling of the new GWM Bucky, which we'll be getting in about 18 to 24 months, which I think is really going to set the cat amongst the pigeons, because if Steed is taking what is position number 6 mission, the new GWM, as yet unnamed Bucky, because I did ask them what the name was, and they just said they don't understand why we want a name. Just call it the P71. No, it needs to have a name. So the GWM Bucky is coming. Haval is going to be bringing a whole bunch of new models as well. So really, you can expect a sort of a massive onslaught. Now, on the last night we were there, we had a banquet, and there were individuals from all over the world where Haval is represented. So there were guys from Iraq, Ukraine, every country under the sun except the U.S. There was no representation of the U.S. because Haval doesn't have a representation in the U.S. So we literally met people from all over the world. And what the chair lady was saying is that by 2025, they want to be...
self-sufficient.
No. Ford, Toyota, GWM. That is the plan.
They want to be up to three.
They want to be number three in the world when it comes to passenger vehicles, utility vehicles.
Well, I mean, they can. They've got the mass in the population.
The drive and the push to get the brand there is, I think, is probably the biggest takeaway from this whole thing. It's they have accepted the fact that the world sees Chinese products as substandard.
Yeah, as a copy.
And that is what they're changing. They're changing the perceptions of the consumers on the ground level, and as soon as they've done realize...
They've got to change the perception and the quality of the product.
And that's the thing. When you see the quality of the product that they're pushing out, and I look at what we're getting back here at home, and I'm going, well, I think we're sort of being shortchanged here. You guys are keeping all the good stuff for yourselves.
You were talking about that 2.4, was it the Bucky?
Yes. So Australia gets like the Haval H9, but they get the 2.4 diesel engine.
Yeah.
When we asked them why we don't get it, they told us quite flatly because our fuel is too crap. And they are not prepared to drop the China standard. 6, Euro 6 standard on the engine just so that we could have it here. So we will only
get... So we're paying more for crap fuel.
Yeah. Mm. So we will only... Until we sort out our petrol, we will not get some of the more advanced cars that are there.
Yeah.
And there are some advanced cars.
Well, I mean, we could leapfrog to the electric car. You know,
I think
this electric... electrification of South Africa is going to have a steep curve where we're going to have old ICE cars, aging ICE cars, and the sudden adoption of electric cars.
Just like Android, smartphones, there will be, everybody will sort of be sitting with their flip phones and stuff for a while, and then all of a sudden, just like in the space of
overnight,
6 months, everybody will be on some form of electric vehicle of some sort. And it is going to be because petrol is going to become completely unaffordable.
Yeah.
And they are going to find a way to charge electric vehicles without the...
need for a plug point.
Without from the national grid.
Yeah.
And this is something that BMW is working on. It's we want to have a way to charge a vehicle that does not affect the national grid. So you don't have to worry about the power going out. You will be able to charge your car regardless.
Well, I think all these changes will come upon South Africa very suddenly. But another thing that you've been getting your teeth into is The Spirit of Amarok, which is a show in the shadow of The Spirit of Africa. And it's an, if you don't know, it's an amateur 4x4 driving event. And some 400 teams are competing. Tell us more.
Okay, so yeah, I literally landed from China. I was at home for 2 days and then back on a plane again out to Nelspruit. We spent 3 days out in the bush with Wim Seidel, Seidel von Amerva, who is the creator of this little
tour. How old is Wim Seidel now?
He must be in his late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But he still runs around like he's 18. Seriously, I think half the Oaks there couldn't keep up with him when it came to the after-dinner drinks. It got pretty rowdy. So... Spirit of Africa is an event that Sorrel put together, and it has now sort of it's been running for a couple of years, and it has always been an amateur 4x4 driving. Guys come in, you as a team, you pay, you enter, you drive. If you win, so be it.
Yeah.
What happened was VW Worldwide said, "Oh, this is actually a pretty good idea," and they started hosting the Spirit of Amarok in their local countries. And the winners of those Spirit of Amarok events were then sent to South Africa to compete. So we've had guys from Russia. There's been guys from the Netherlands, Germany, guys from all over the world that have won in their respective countries and then come here to compete. What they're hoping in the next few years...
You said it's a camel trophy for VW, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it is exactly that. And I'm telling you, Sorrel von Amerva might be in his late 70s, but the man isn't. Bastard. the tests that he had us do with these vehicles, it was something that you would never consider. Right, we're going to do a blindfolded driving challenge, gents. All right, so your navigator is going to sit in the car with me. He's going to talk to you over the radio while you're blindfolded. And you're going to reverse through a slalom, uphill, while he's talking to you over the radio. That is just like seven different things all put together to make a very, very difficult challenge. And one team out of 20 managed to get it right. And they hit every pole on the way up. there was another one of the special challenges that they did. Was you going to reverse uphill towards a flagpole. The person who gets the toe ball of the
toe hitch yeah.
closest to the flag wins. The problem is you're reversing up a 30-degree incline. They've taped the reverse camera closed, so you can't see how close you are. Yeah. And it's crapshoot. You really don't know who gets closest. And if you hit the pole, zero. If you roll forward, zero.
So it sounds like fun. Who can take part?
Anybody.
What does it cost?
I'm not really sure. You'd have to go to the Spirit of Amarok website. Yeah. You can check. I think the entries for this year's one are closed already because we have 400.
So is this for somebody that owns an Amarok? Or do you have
for
to
anybody.
Put together a team?
If you fancy yourself an amateur 4x4 driver,
you can
you sign in. I'm not really sure, what the costs are, but you sign in and you enter.
Is the vehicle provided?
The vehicle is provided. They have at this course where we were, it's going to be there for 3 months. Oh. Sara will be living there with the cars, and for the next 3 months, over 420 teams will be going. It's a 2 days per rotation.
Yeah,
you go, and the teams which score the highest, and they are very, very strict. I mean, there were some of the stages we scored a zero because we hit one too many flags. So, of these 400 teams will be whittled down, and they will eventually have their winner of the local Spirit of Amarok series. That is now coupled with all of the Spirit of Amaroks that are running concurrently around the world. And then later on in the year, we will have the International Spirit of Africa event, which I'm not sure if it will be held in South Africa or Botswana. But yes, the best of the best of the best of the world will be coming to compete in this event. And I tell you what, it is a hell of a lot of fun. But you must just be prepared to sleep on the ground because it was that.
Awesome
a tent
stuff.
And a sleeping bag and spiders and ticks.
So if you're keen on camping, go to the Spirit of Amarok website and go and check it out. But let's get on to some tech news. Thanks, Lawrence. And Tesla can now change lanes without driver permission.
You needed permission?
Yeah. So apparently there are two modes on the Tesla, and the first mode is notification, changing lanes without permission, is notifying you that it's changing lanes. The other one is for the driver to give input to change lanes. So obviously, don't think that self-driving is just a free-for-all, because you still have to have your hands on the steering wheel with the Tesla. You can't just self-drive without your hands on the steering wheel. So the car is going to change lanes if you give it a route, and it's going to navigate its way around other vehicles. So I don't know, good or bad thing?
But I don't know. I don't know if I would want my car changing lanes if I'm happy in the lane that I'm in. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. So, what are the parameters for changing?
What are the parameters? But you know what I do love is that with electric cars and technology and stuff, the amount of data and information that you can get. I mean, one of the stats here, these Tesla drivers have traveled more than 66 million miles using the feature, and more than 9 million suggested lane changes have been successfully executed with the feature in use. So it's clearly working.
Yeah.
No, I mean, of course it's working. I mean, Tesla's gaining the most data out of all self-driving cars or self-driving capable cars in the world.
Yeah, so, you know, if it works, then why not? I mean, you can override it if you wanted to.
Well, I mean, let's talk about something else that that kind of causes this autonomous driving, which is the sensors on the car itself. Now, most self-driving capable cars, other than the Tesla, uses a technology called LiDAR.
Yeah.
Now, LiDAR is a more sophisticated version of radar, and what it does is it sends out lasers to the world around it, and like a bat, the point at which that laser bounces back from, it then is able to create a picture. And Google and most of the other self-driving capable car manufacturers that are trying to get self-driving cars onto the road are using LiDAR. So you've seen that big police dome siren looking thing on the roof of the car. That's LiDAR. And most car manufacturers that want autonomous driving are using LiDAR. What's the problem with LiDAR? It can't see what objects are. It can only create a 3D map of the object.
So
an example is, if a plastic packet blows across the road, it's going to avoid the plastic packet. Whereas what you should be doing, especially, is you should be driving over the plastic packet,
and not swerving for it.
So this is becoming more and more of a problem, because Tesla has now highlighted the fact that LiDAR is a fool's errand. It's a waste of time.
Makes sense.
It's a very good technology for things like, they use it in their SpaceX launches to dock with the International Space Station. And it has applications, but not in a car.
Sure.
And police use it to trap you, believe it or not. LiDAR is used. Yeah. So they bounce a laser off your car.
It's the same stuff we've had it in test cars before. They use it for the cruise control, control.
Yes.
And you'll be going around a bend, and it picks up the car that's in the lane next to you, and the brakes apply. It's very, very frustrating.
So LiDAR has its limits, and it should not be used in self-driving cars. So what is the solution to changing lanes effectively? And I think Tesla's on the money. And that is, create something that the human eye can do, which is depth perception, image recognition, and build a map of the world around you using cameras. So that's how Tesla gets these things right. They don't use LiDAR.
They use
cameras.
It is one of the things I saw when I was at the Auto Shanghai. It was I actually highlighted it in one of my posts, where I said, this is what Martin was talking about. And it was a giant city map that had been laid out on a desk, where all the cars that were driving around were talking to each other and the infrastructure and the city, and the big brain in the middle knew exactly where everything and everyone was at any given time. So there was no chance that anyone was going to crash into anything, and
I suppose it's like air traffic control for vehicles. Exactly what it is. You know, you've got somebody sitting, the computer will obviously do this, but you've got someone who goes, okay, cool, that oak's in there and he's at this height, and, you know, he can...
Humans do air traffic control.
Absolutely.
Still,
eh? Yeah. The car needs to be able to decide, yes, that was a plastic packet, or yes, that was a pedestrian, and not confuse the two.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Driver.
And the only way to do that is through cameras.
Yeah.
Cameras are the only things that can recognize this as a squishy human versus a
plastic packet. My point is there shouldn't be plastic packets on the road.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then very lastly, back to I think Martin's going to be happy about this, and that is manufacturers search for the perfect electric car sound in the post-petrol era. I want to pull my freaking hair out with this, because the one thing I hate is road noise. And car noise, and the drone of cars, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you can hear them.
I agree with you, but I'm sure you've seen at some stage in your driving career some Muppet step out into the road and not have even heard the V8 beast coming down the road.
So when
you've got a car that doesn't make a sound, the oak's not even going to... Because we were taught, look left, look right. I still apply that. It actually was something that I used, that I learned at school. Some oaks just
don't do it.
Just go.
No, I mean, I agree with that.
Remove the warning labels and let Mother Lady take
it. There's such sound pollution that can go away with these electric cars.
Absolutely.
I don't get it. Find another solution.
You're probably going to have some nanny state like the UK that will require all electric cars to beep while they drive.
No, you don't need beeping. So why can't the image recognition cameras on this car recognize that this Muppet is going to cross the road, apply the brakes, and apply the horn?
And swear at him.
And swear at him.
You can plug in the car. Move!
Get out of the freaking way.
Well, if electric cars are required to make a noise, mine's going to bleat like a sheep.
No, please do not put artificial exhaust pipes on electric cars. This is...
I think it'll be great. Can you imagine the noise pollution then? It would be like a farm.
No, you're going to get
got a horse, and somebody's got a dog, and, you know, there's a pigeon. And
Lawrence says he's going to have a sheep.
Yeah.
Why not? It you know, it'll be like ringtones on your phone.
Absolutely.
What do I want to sound like this morning?
Ringtones.
Yeah.
It's gonna be chaos. It's gonna be chaos.
I think it could be quite funny actually, but they're gonna have to limit it. But you could be fun. I mean, or imagine just your car just plays music. Like whatever you're playing inside plays outside as well. Yeah, but
imagine everybody's doing that. Everybody's got a different freaking ringtone for their car. It'll be glorious.
No, come on.
So what are they going to do then? What is the answer yet? Just let the car sound like it's supposed to sound, like its natural sound. It's going to have that.
No.
Most modern cars nowadays, actually, they pipe engine noise into the cabin through the speakers. For the same reason that automotive cars these days look like cars.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot of bullshit. It shouldn't happen. It's like, just give me the silence. That's what I say. And we've come to the end of the show, so I'm going to cut it off there. Silence is golden. All right. Well, thanks, boys.
Thank you very much.
Good one, and see you in 2 weeks.
This is CliffCentral.com.